Coming to you from the HagmanReport.com studio, located in the Keystone State, birthplace of a mighty nation, it's your host, Doug Hagman.
And welcome to Hagman. It's the Hagman Report, where truth can't be silenced. We will never be silenced, no matter how hard they try, no matter how hard people try. We will not be silenced. The Hagman Report will not be silenced. The end of the beginning, or is this the beginning of the end? That's the question. The stay-at-home orders continue to persist. You're starting to see some discontent across the land. The states right now are conspiring. I don't know what other word to use except conspire. The states are conspiring. Certain states are conspiring. There is a meme on Twitter and as well as Facebook that is so important to point out, because right now Twitter and Facebook, but Twitter especially, is allowing Chinese communist propaganda ads on their platform while banning President Trump's ads. I'm just going to tell you flat out, the communist Chinese influence, the communist influence in this platform, in the social media realm, is beyond, it defies description. Are we okay on, Eric the Tech, how you doing? You okay?
Yep, doing good.
Are we okay on, audio, video? Or are we live?
Do you not have any?
No, I have it. There seems to be a disconnect between audio and video. I'm just saying.
No, we're okay. Good.
All right. Well, folks, you know, it happens. All right. Again, the backlash, there's a backlash building. Protests are being organized as well, but there's an organization, a conspiracy between states, mostly blue states, and they're working against President Trump. There's a meme on Twitter, as I mentioned, social networking, including Facebook as well, where President Trump says, look, you know, I've got the ultimate authority here constitutionally. Let's play. For those of you who have seen this, it began trending early this morning. I saw it about, I don't know, 5:30 in the morning, 6 in the morning this morning, and it looked like it was trending. And some of the hashtags, dictator Trump, authoritarian Trump, fascist Trump, Trump is a dictator. You know the memes, the hashtags, the talking points of the fascist, the communist, yes, they're related left, and working in conjunction with foreign powers. But let's play the video that really kind of set the stage for this meme. It's 30 seconds. Go ahead.
When somebody's the president of the United States, the authority is total. And that's the way it's got to be.
The authority is total.
It's total. It's total. And the governors know that. The governors know that. Now you have a couple of bands of excuse me. You have a couple.
Could you rescind that order?
You have a couple of bands of Democrat governors, but they will agree to it. They will agree to it. But the authority of the president of the United States having to do with the subject we're talking about is total.
Okay. All right. There it is. Now, okay. So who elected him king? Who appointed him king? How can he be such a fascist, such a totalitarianist? What's going on? Well, let me give you the backstory so you understand, because it is not what it appears to be. Okay, here's the backstory. At the Conservative Treehouse, there's an article titled, It Begins, East and West Coast Blue States Team Up to Begin Economic Civil War. Now, it's important for you to read this. This is a Conservative Treehouse. This is an article published yesterday by Sundance. And this is what, in a nutshell, this is what President Trump was referring to. Now, we saw this coming. Everyone who has been paying attention saw this coming. You've got the democratically controlled, the communist controlled states, the blue states, the governors of the blue states on both coasts conspiring, there's no other word to use, to begin an economic civil war to block the White House effort to reopen the United States economy. You know, remember Bill Maher, remember every single person who said, yeah, let's have a recession. If it takes a recession to get Trump out of the White House, let's do it. To hell with the little people. Right? Remember that? Well, I'll tell you what, here's what's happening. You're about to get your wish. Well, not quite. Because we do have a thing called the Constitution. The Constitution does state, and I'll be talking about this tomorrow, no state shall, without the consent of Congress, enter into any agreement or compact with another state. That's paraphrased from Article 1, Section 10 of the United States Constitution. Yet, if you put that CTH article back up, if you don't mind, go to the graphic, the first graphic. And take a look at that first graphic, because there, right there, perfect. The three-step plan seems predictable, writes Sundance, and absolutely get out ahead of President Trump. Defy the all-clear and shape the economic benefit to their political allies. By the way, I've got a great show lined up for you. This hour is going to be just information-packed. Next hour, Stan Dale. But this hour, you've really just hang with me, because I'll tie it all up here. Okay, so you've got the getting ahead of President Trump, making him look as bad as possible. Defy the all-clear and shake the economic benefits to their political allies, and then use Dr. Fauci, the upcoming dossier, to hit the administration for heartlessly opening the economic, the economy too early. That's the plan right there in a paragraph. So you look at the graphic and you see the East Coast governors of New York. You got Cuomo. You've got Murphy of New Jersey. You've got Lamont of Connecticut and Wolf in my state. God, Delaware, Carney, who heads Delaware, and Raimondo, who heads Rhode Island. Is that even a state, or is that just a parking lot? No, look, I know we have people in Rhode Island. I'm sorry. Look, I know we have people in Rhode Island, and God bless you folks. All right. Yeah, there goes the email. All right. So when you control important infrastructural areas, that's key to their strategy. So you got six northeast governors. They're gonna conspire and to work against the president's agenda to get back to work. And wait until you hear the results, because we're seeing the results right now. Just wait. Just hang on. Hold it right there. Hang on. Then you got the West Coast. Newsom, Oregon, Brown, Newsom, California, Brown from Oregon, Inslee from Washington State. I just had a chill run up and down my spine. Yeah. Well, they're getting together and they're conspiring against the president. And so when you take the West Coast and you take the East Coast and you combine them and you get this conspiracy, we are going to really screw with the economy. We're going to screw with opening up the country. That's what we're going to do. And then regardless of what happens, regardless, President Trump is going to be blamed. It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter if it's a governor's fault. It doesn't matter. The president will be blamed. But this is to oust Trump. An effort to oust Trump. Remember, Russia didn't work. Ukraine didn't work. Everything else didn't work. Now they're trying this, and this is what they're, you know, the economy, the soft underbelly of our nation right now. So, all right. The context. Remember that Twitter meme, that 30-second audio video, Trump is a dictator meme. Well, I've got the ultimate authority. And yes, And this is why the Constitution is not taught in states, or not taught in schools, is because, well, we'd be too intelligent for these morons on the left. Okay. Then part of the and I'll have the link in the program description box, at HagmanReportLive.com. Okay, not on YouTube, not on Spreaker or iTunes, no, at HagmanReportLive.com. Yeah, I'm so sorry you have to come there for the program description and links. But you know what? You see, we are autonomous and we'll be autonomous. We don't need YouTube. We don't need any of these. So that's why we do it that way. All right. But, so writes Sundance, it appears that the governors don't want to assemble their plans openly. However, they rushed to, publicity to avoid their enemy, President Trump, striking strategically against their schemes. Very important. In other words, they are conspiring in, behind the scenes against President Trump. The economic freedom and liberty zone will encompass the red region. Really, and when you look at the red region, what do we have? We have the bulk of the country minus the urban areas, coastal cities and such. Okay. Now, however, the urban dense populations, the blue pockets within red zones, they're going to push back against the efforts of the red generals in an attempt to retain alignment with their blue team generals. Depending on the strength of the urban forces, there may be roadblocks, sabotage, skirmishes, and political violence against the freedom and liberty red team. Remember what I just said. Remember what he wrote, Sundance wrote. Presumptuous to say it's a he, but I believe it is. I believe it's maybe more than one. But the fact is this. There will be, and mark my words, 14th day of April 2020, there will be skirmishes in the United States. Will it rise to a level of a civil war? Perhaps. Trust me on this. This is, and he notes that red captives within the blue zones are going to have to be smart and strategic. Blue tech will be assisting the totalitarian blue generals. Direct confrontation against the blue forces should be avoided. And you can read the article, but you get the idea. Now, the second graphic is a better graphic. And it's going to be a hell of a battle. It's underneath that paragraph, the second graphic on that article. A spring and summer conflict like we've never seen in the history of the United States politics outside of actual physical civil war. Remember, a lot of this war that we're seeing is being fought behind the scenes or being fought without guns, knives, you know, and nunchucks, okay? This is being fought at a different level. However, it's going to be reduced to that level as we see the summer unfolding. And I'll tell you why. You're going to be hungry. That's why. You're going to be really hungry. And sometimes I know when people get hungry, they get irritated. But it's going to be an artificially leftist induced hunger. It's going to be a globalist induced hunger. I try to keep track of what's going on in grocery stores around me and around different parts of the country. I spoke to Eric the Tech. He's the stealthy surveillance going out and looking at what's in the grocery stores. Things are kind of getting stocked back up again. God forbid toilet paper, right? But it's kind of funny that people should focus in on that. But anyway, there's some shortages. Not too much yet, but there will be, and I'll tell you why. It's story number two. Article number two. From the same site, Conservative Treehouse, kind of linked together. This is posted today. Now, take a look at this, folks. On your screen, phase five supply chain with a message from a dairy farmer. Oh, and please read this in its entirety. Oh, please do read this in its entirety because it's going to tell you why you are going to be a little bit on the hungry side. It's going on right now. I'm seeing it. You're seeing it. Maybe you're not knowing you're seeing it, but it all has to do with the supply. Well, the food production chain. And there's a graphic right there, the food production chain. From the production to the processing to the distribution, And now here it kind of takes a split. There's a split in the road. One way goes to the restaurants. The other way goes to retail establishments. For example, your grocery stores, Costco, Sam's Club, Walmart, Kroger's, Piggly Wiggly. All right. And then from there it goes to home preparation. And on the other fork, it goes to restaurants and then to the restaurant preparation and to the ultimate consumer, the restaurant customer. And on the other fork, as I said, the retail, the home preparation, and then the home consumption. All right. Simple, right? Sure is. Now, most Americans are not aware that food consumption in the United States was a 60-40 proposition. This is key to understand. 60% of all food was consumed outside of the home. In other words, we have this nation of people who eat at restaurants. 60%. 40% goes to grocers and is consumed inside the home. Now, food outside the home includes restaurants, fast food locales, schools, corporate cafeterias, university lunchrooms, manufacturing cafeterias, hotels, food trucks, parks, and amusement food sellers, and many more. All right. By the way, how many people have been able to get a Caesar salad at the Outback? Just asking. If you have, great. It hasn't affected your area yet. If you haven't, maybe you gotta wonder why. Where's the lettuce? Ain't got no lettuce. And no, it's not because we don't have some illegal. No, it has to do with supply chain. You're seeing cracks in the supply chain right now. Now, I don't want to scare anyone, but I'm going to tell you, you're going to see food that will be unavailable here in the summer. And when this comes back around, and by this I'm talking about the effects as well as the virus itself, no one's going to be happy. But this article goes into the five phases. And it's an important read because it talks about the supply chain. The food away from home sector has its own supply chain. And very few restaurants and venues purchase food products from retail grocery outlets. In other words, you know, Outback or whatever, they don't go to the local grocery store, pick up their food and bring it to, no, it's delivered from the processing plant right to the grocer, as the first graphic showed you. Now, there's some important statistics built into this article. As Agricultural Secretary Sonny Perdue recently noted, there are over 800 commercial and public warehouses in the continental U.S., right? They store frozen products. There is a snapshot of the food that we had in storage at the end of February. Listen to this. Think back now. End of February. This is mid-April. Over 302 million pounds of frozen butter, 1.36 billion, that's B, pounds of frozen cheese, 925 million pounds of frozen chicken, over a billion pounds of frozen fruit. And you can read it. This bulk food storage is how the U.S. consumer food supply ensures consistent availability, regardless of weather impacts, seasons, and such. And this is key. Remember what Steve Quayle has been saying? Celeste has been saying? Others have been saying? Celeste Solom has been saying? As a nation, we essentially stay one harvest ahead of demand by storing it and smoothing out any peak and valley shortfalls. In other words, just one harvest ahead. That's all we got. There are a total of 175,642 commercial facilities involved in this supply chain across the country. Very few Americans are aware of this. However, that stored food supply is the supply chain for food manufacturers who process the ingredients into this, into a variety of branded food products and distribute to your local supermarket. That bulk stored food and the subsequent supply chain is entirely separate from the fresh food supply chain used by restaurants, used by that other fork. For almost 8 weeks, the retail supply chain has been operating beyond capacity and burn rate of raw food products is up a stunning 40%. So those bulk warehouses, the feeder pools for retail consumer manufactured food products, they're starting to run low. He writes this, believe me, we don't want to find out what happens when those 800 mass storage facilities are run out and the food supply chain will be a big part of President Trump's decision making on reopening the economy, thereby reopening restaurants, cafeterias, and so on, and switching consumption back to fresh supply. What did I play at the beginning? What are Democratic governors, what are the fascist, the communist governors of the states trying to do to this country? What's Hollywood trying to do to this country? What are these unfunny comedians trying to do to this country? These late night talk shows, what are they trying to do to this country? I'll tell you what they don't give a damn about you. They don't give a damn about the United States. All they care about is, and all they can feel is their visceral hatred of the president. And they will burn this country down. They'll burn it down before they will allow President Trump to have another term. That's how much they hate America. That's how much they hate President Trump. More importantly, that's how much they hate you. And that's how little they think of you. The politicians, Hollywood, and these people who think, you know, these people who think that, their ideology of fascism is correct. Read that article, both articles. There's a email in there, or a message in there from a David Osterloh, a 61-year-old dairy farmer. It's important. It's extremely critical. I'm telling you right now, you're going to see food shortages this summer. This is dependent upon the actions of the states if they're going to go the way they say they're going to go. The blue states, the communist governors, your days of going to the store and picking out what you want are going to be limited, I'm afraid. And that's food. What's not stated in here are other things. Guns, ammunition. Oh, they're already coming after that. Interestingly enough, liquor. It's kind of interesting. I seen today that last night, Ohio's banning anyone from out of state to come into their state and buy liquor. I don't know why I think that's funny. I don't know why, because it's not. It's funny in a sense that it's not funny. It's sad. It's sad. It really is. But remember, at the beginning of the show, I said, look, President Trump is coming out with this, and there's this meme, there's this whole, and you're going to see more of this. You're going to see so much more. You're going to want to vomit about President Trump being this king, this dictator, this tyrant, this fascist, this person who's actually going to cause more deaths in the United States than Pol Pot, perhaps, because of his decisions to reopen sections of the country against the wishes of the governor. And you're going to have to see this big campaign. Just mark my words. You're going to see this big campaign by the governors, big campaign by the leftists, by Hollywood, and say, you know what, President Trump, he's killing people. That's going to happen. All right. We can segment that out, maybe. I'd love to have that as a standalone because I think that's important. Okay. Stefan Molyneux. He's got his own channel on YouTube, almost a million subscribers, just a tremendous researcher and investigator. I'm going to play you. There's three segments I'm going to play you from one video. And I'm going to thank him in advance for allowing me to use this. Please subscribe to Stefan Molyneux. The link will be in the program description box, not on YouTube, not on Spreaker, but at HagmanReportLive.com. That's where to go for all of the information. It's HagmanReportLive.com. So don't leave some inane comment in YouTube.
Well, the link's not there.
So that's how I hear it in my head.
Yeah, you said you have a link, but the link's not there.
Yeah, it's over at Hagman Report Live. So support Stefan Molyneux. Subscribe to his channel. He does great work. He starts off in this video. The title of the video is, what is the title of the video? I think it's about China. It's about China being responsible for everything here. The case against China. I had a look on my other computer. The case against China. It's my bad side. Sorry. The case against China. Now, folks, pretend you're in a courtroom for a second. Pretend you're the jury. Pretend you're, I don't care, but you're in a courtroom. Stefan Molyneux lays out the case against China. At first, he gives you a hypothetical, which I did not have in this. I'm advanced beyond that, about a guy who, his wife goes missing. Very interesting analogy, comparison. And then he gets into the crime or the case against China. Now, I know that most of you know this. At least some of you know this. Maybe the majority do. Maybe not. But the way this is presented, as if this were to be a case in court, fabulous. Here he is. This is segment one. This starts off with this goes beyond the introduction. And by the way, watch the whole video all the way through by way of the link. But this starts off with the steps of showing how China is responsible, what happened. Because I will tell you this, motive and means are extremely important. Go ahead and play the first clip. It's about 4 minutes or so long.
We'll start with language. So it is important to be detailed and specific about the language you're going to use. So SARS-CoV-2, SARS-CoV-2 is SARS. But it is not called that in common parlance. It's referred to as coronavirus, COVID-19, etc. And that's because, of course, SARS is pretty terrifying. And so I think it's kind of like a spin control thing. Don't get people associating what's going on with SARS, sudden acute respiratory syndrome. So SARS-CoV-2 is the virus. The disease that the virus produces is called COVID-19. I'm going to be talking a lot about viruses in this presentation. I really, really want to make that clear. Now, the name results from the need to track it annually. So there's COVID-19. There will be mutations, of course. There'll be a COVID-20, 21, 22, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. There's no putting the genie back in the bottle, the toothpaste back in the toothpaste tube. This Frankenvirus is out in the world. It's not going back anywhere. And this is why I say, if the Chinese Communist Party is guilty, it is perhaps the greatest crime ever committed against humanity, which will have to struggle and labor under this virtually in perpetuity. Depending, of course, on what happens with a vaccine and what happens with treatment, this is the potential. So, of the virus SARS-CoV-2, more than 45 have been sequenced. Most are the Wuhan strand with single nucleotide changes, virtually identical. And there are currently two main strains of SARS-CoV-2, RATG-13 and the Wuhan virus, which do act differently in the body. So SARS-CoV-2 is a combination of a bat SARS-like virus plus SARS coronavirus with four HIV inserts. It's not AIDS, but HIV inserts, which I will get to shortly. So why is this all so horribly dangerous? Well, I want you to think of a wheelbarrow full of random keys. You'd ever have that superintendent who'd sort of roam around your building. I grew up in apartments and sounds like a guy in chainmail, just chung, 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 right? So I want you to think of a wheelbarrow full of keys, thousands and thousands of keys, right? And I want you to think of human cells as having a lock. And in order for a virus to enter and damage human cells, it needs to have a key that goes into this lock. And those keys are extraordinarily rare, which is why there are so many of us and we're hard to kill with viruses these days. So this bat SARS-like virus does have a spike protein, but it doesn't plug into the human, what's called the ACE2 receptor, right? That's the keyhole that the key goes into. It's the lock that the key goes into. So the bat SARS-like virus has a spike protein that does not plug into the human ACE2 receptor. That's why it's not too dangerous. SARS coronavirus does have this spike protein. It does have this key that goes into human cells. Now, why is this so dangerous? So SARS-CoV-2 has the replication rate of bat SARS-like virus, but with the addition of the spike protein from SARS coronavirus. So this is what's so important to understand. This is why I call it a Frankenvirus. It has the worst of both worlds. Well, best for the virus, worst for us. So you have, or somebody, or somehow, a virus has been combined that has the high reproduction rate of a low danger virus, along with the high danger rate of a low reproduction rate virus. So you have high danger and high reproduction, which is why it is spreading like wildfire. The odds of this occurring in a single bat species, then transmitting to human beings, is highly, highly, highly unlikely. The horseshoe bats, which are the primary holder of these coronaviruses, are high in the mountains, deep in caves, don't have much contact with human beings, and we'll get into all of that in a few minutes, but I want you to look at these odds, because there are things that are possible, things that are probable, things that are improbable, and things that are extraordinarily improbable, and things that are impossible. At a certain degree of improbability, it blends into impossible.
Yeah, I know. He's saying, hey, Doug, you're on. I know. I was looking at this. Look, language, it starts off with language, not steps. Steps is next. Language is important. We call it COVID-19, right? That's what is known. You know why? He said it. Spin control. This is SARS-CoV-2. It's SARS, but it is not called that in common parlance. No, it's coronavirus. It's COVID-19. 19 for the year, as he mentioned, and 22 and so on. Different strains, different mutations will continue forward. And he also mentioned, too, that SARS-CoV-2, more than 45 have been sequenced. Most are the Wuhan strain, but with single nucleotide changes. Now, there are currently two main strains, okay? RATG-13 and the Wuhan virus. And they act differently in the human body. SARS-CoV-2 is a combination of a bat SARS-like virus. Remember, SARS-like, bat SARS-like virus, plus SARS coronavirus with four HIV inserts. His whole presentation there in that segment using language is showing us that language with respect to this, we must be precise. You know, it's kind of like talking about murder, criminal negligent homicide. I'm very familiar with that, given the with respect to my son. Okay, so look, the bat SARS-like virus has a spike protein that does not plug into the human ACE2 receptor he mentioned, and the SARS coronavirus does have this spike protein. So the bottom line here with respect to language is that the language is important, how we describe this. This is a deadly combination. And we are seeing this in real time. All right. So that's important. And again, Stefan Molyneux, his channel, subscribe and support to his channel. We thank him for allowing the use of this, of this video. Second segment. This is a, like a 3-minute segment. This is the next part of it. Go ahead and play that.
So let's look at the background and the situation. So first of all, the official story started in late December 2019, where they said a pneumonia of unknown origin was claimed to be associated with a seafood market in Wuhan, China. And within a few days, the seafood market was closed and scrubbed. That is extraordinarily wrong, dangerous, irresponsible, destructive, and I would argue, from a pandemic standpoint, it's criminal. Because you have the source of a virus all being closed and scrubbed and disinfected and destroyed. You can't do any forensics. You can't easily track the people. You can't measure everything. You can't, I mean, it's just gone. You have destroyed the scene of the crime, so to speak, which is catastrophic and has been catastrophic. And why would you want to do that? Why wouldn't you, if this was zoonotic, if it was natural in origin, why would you want to scrub the entire scene of the place you say it started from before you've had a chance to thoroughly examine it, before outside experts have come in, before you've contacted everyone? Come on. There's a reason why, if you're claiming it comes from this market, and then, oh, look, the market is gone, closed, scrubbed, destroyed, nobody can prove it. So why would you want to destroy the evidence? Well, I think we all know that. So by late January 2020, the Huanan Seafood Market was officially considered to be the source of this novel coronavirus. However, a paper published in The Lancet, highly prestigious medical journal, reveals that the first patient, December the 1st, 2019, had no relation to the Huanan Seafood Market. No relation. If you are saying that it came from this seafood market, that hypothesis, that conjecture really, is thoroughly destroyed by the first instance of somebody not having a relation to the Huanan Seafood Market, and the very first patient had no such relation. According to some official documents that have been reported upon, November the 17th, 2019, was the date of the first infected patient, and this is 6.5 weeks before China alerted the World Health Organization. Now, I really want to point this out, and I'll go into this in more detail later. China does not have a choice about whether it informs the world of a potential illness, a potential infection, a potential pandemic. This is not optional. There are signed, grievous, fundamentally essential treaties, a lot of which came in after the 2003 SARS crisis, that China must inform the world, as must all signatories to these documents, these health documents, these health treaties. You must tell the world. This is not optional. This would be another crime. No epidemiological link was found between the first patient and later cases. So there's a source that's not the first patient and is not the Huanan Seafood Market. Very, very important. There's a cause or a source to this new coronavirus, this deadly coronavirus, that is neither the first patient nor the Huanan Seafood Market. By December 10th, 2 of the 3 new cases had no relation to the Huanan Seafood Market. The claim, of course, is that the coronavirus came from bats, but no bats were sold at the Huanan Seafood Market, and no bats were found there.
No bats.
Two species of bats do host a subset of beta coronaviruses, especially horseshoe bats. Now, why didn't the World Health Organization call out China for not informing the World Health Organization of a new and dangerous pneumonia for 6.5 weeks? Why did the World Health Organization not call out China? Well, because the World Health Organization is hopelessly corrupt and in the pocket of China, as are many international agencies. So these beta coronaviruses, beta is a subset of viruses to the SARS-CoV-2 virus. 14 out of the 41 early patients, again, had no relation to the Huanan Seafood Market. Destroys the conjecture completely and totally. Now, the guilty party, in general, accuses others. And so if the Chinese Communist Party is pointing at this Huanan Seafood Market as the source of the coronavirus, and they have destroyed and scrubbed the seafood market, and they are openly stating, or events have come out, or the data has come out, that many of the early patients had no relation to the seafood market, it means that they're covering up the true source. You wouldn't destroy the market. If it genuinely was, you'd invite people to come in, you'd get other experts, you'd open up your books. So they destroy the evidence, they point at the market, though they have direct evidence to the contrary, it's because they're covering up the true source of the virus, without a doubt.
There you go. You know, I can't count how many cases I've worked where the scene was cleaned up, where they attempted to clean up the scene, the perpetrator, that is. And again, I think back to the case of my son, that it's still it's still being handled at the county investigative level. And I think, look, you know, people, including governments and people that make up governments, they're stupid. All right. It never stops amazing me how many people think they're so damn smart. And yeah, we're just going to clean the, we're going to tamper with this crime scene. We're going to clean this up. We're going to clean the blood up. As I watched on TV where if you pour enough bleach on there, you know, luminol won't. Yeah. Okay. Whatever. The evidence is pretty clear. The important thing here is, when you look at the Lancet publication, the first patient December 1st had no relation to that wet market at all. In fact, that wet seafood market, that wet market, is nothing more than a red herring. The seafood market played a role, whereas the virus went into and came out of that market, but not in the way it was portrayed. November 17th, according to official documents, was the date of the first infected patient, 6.5 weeks before China alerted the World Health Organization. By the way, what good is the WHO? Which goes back to previous programs where I pointed out where Donald Trump says, look, we're going to withhold aid from the World Health Organization. And who runs that? It's not a doctor. Okay, they call him a doctor, but he's not a doctor. He's a putz, okay, in my view. So, that's the situation. I'm going to get through the last one very quickly. The last one is the longest of them. Finally, steps. The first one was language. Second, situation. Third is steps. And again, Stefan Molyneux, subscribe to his channel. Follow him. Support his work. He does great work. I want to make sure the attribution is there. The link will be in the program description box at HagmanReportLive.com. These are the steps. Now, this is really key, and then I'll tie all of this up together. Go ahead and play clip 3.
January 29th, 2020, an article in the aforementioned Lancet revealed that out of 99 COVID-19 cases, 50 had no relation to the Huanan seafood market. So, this means that between a third and a half were infected but no exposure to this seafood market. The first case infection must have been in November 2019, which means that the virus was spreading weeks before the Huanan seafood market cluster. So, if there's a virus that gets out in Wuhan, you would expect there to be a cluster at a place like the Huanan seafood market, which is not, of course, a clean place, but it's a place where a lot of people congregate to get their food. So, of course, you would expect a cluster there. But assuming that the cluster is where people gather, and that's where it came from. No. It was brought into the Huanan seafood market, and it came out of it concentrated. In December 2019, Chinese authorities established diagnostic criteria for SARS-CoV-2, which included exposure to the Huanan seafood market. Now, that is truly astonishing, and that's as guilty a set of confessions as I can conceivably imagine. So they said, in order to be diagnosed with SARS-CoV-2, you have to have the symptoms, you have to test positive, and you have to have been exposed to the Huanan seafood market. Come on. I mean, that is forcing the data to fit the conjecture to the point where the data breaks and the world takes a blow. The World Health Organization switched the name from Wuhan pneumonia to SARS-CoV-2. This is, of course, entirely political. It's covering up for the communists and these endless accusations of racism. Middle East respiratory syndrome, you have the Spanish flu, you have German measles, you have a wide variety of illnesses that are named for their point of origin. It's very common, it's very natural, and the fact that they would change it again is part of the whole PR spin that is going on at the expense of human beings actually surviving this thing. January the 10th, 2020, China published the full SARS-CoV-2 genome sequences. There were five in total. Now, the sequence, of course, is published in order to allow for the building of test kits. You can't test for something that you haven't genetically identified, at least not very easily. So the full genome sequence was published. Now, this, of course, is extraordinarily fast. It's kind of hard to get across just how implausible it is that in the tiny, tiny amount of time since they first got wind of this thing, that they were able to publish the full genome sequence, right? You've got a pneumonia of unknown origin. So you have to, first of all, people are just sick, right? And then you've got to identify what is actually causing the sickness. You have to extract it. You have to purify it. And then you have to sequence the genome. I mean, this is long, complicated stuff. And the idea that you'd get five of these things in this tiny, short amount of time, how did they publish these sequences so quickly if they didn't already have the sequences? This would normally take months. And we're talking about early to mid-January. Now, why would they already have the sequence of SARS-CoV-2? Well, we'll get to that in a minute or two. February the 3rd, 2020, Chinese scientists published a paper noting that SARS-CoV-2 was, quote, closely related, end quote, to two viruses sampled from bats in Zhoushan by the People's Liberation Army, 100% in some areas. That is important for reasons we'll get to. Well, it's obviously important as I'm saying it now. We'll get to the reasons why in a couple of minutes. So there are, of course, two possibilities. Either SARS-CoV-2 was a mutation from the bat SARS-like virus, or it was bioengineered from the bat virus. These are really the only two possibilities. Now, for a bat virus to develop that key in a wheelbarrow of keys insert to the human cells, the ACE2 receptors, it would have to develop this. And why would a bat necessarily do that? I mean, it would happen, I guess, just by random genetic accident. Again, although it having this particular key is, to me, a ridiculous coincidence to believe that that would happen just zoonotically is ridiculous. But let's say it did develop such a thing. Well, that virus would not last particularly long. It provides no advantage to the bat or to the virus itself without a human host. So the bat's 900 kilometers away from Wuhan. If they develop this kind of virus, how on earth would it end up spreading like wildfire to people? And why on earth would it spread 900 kilometers away from its origin source? There is functionally no real chance that this resulted from a natural mutation that allowed the virus to jump species. It really is not possible. Look, it's sort of like you go to the grocery store and you find the last banana. I know, bear with me, but please understand. Is it possible that a strange coincidence of winds plucked the banana from someplace in the tropics, put it high up in the stratosphere, and then blew it through the open doors of your grocery store? Well, I guess theoretically, once in 20 universes, such a thing could conceivably happen. But would you probably say that it was picked and transported and delivered by a truck so that you could eat it? Of course. Believing that this Frankenvirus was a natural mutation that jumped species is like believing that a pile of car junk in a scrapyard could, through the process of being attacked by a hurricane, be assembled perfectly into a car. Is it theoretically possible? Come on. I mean, we have to have probabilities in our processing of reality. Right? So this S protein is the key. Human cells are the lock. Imagining opening a lock with the first key picked from a random bag of keys. Right? A big wheelbarrow full of keys. You dig your hand in, you pick it up, and you open the door right away. That's crazy, right? So the way I process it for myself, just to understand, right, the difference between these two things, right, the two source viruses. So let's say you have a thief who breaks into your house but doesn't really do any damage. It's easy for him to get into your house, but, you know, what does he do? He changes the time on your alarm clock. Maybe he unplugs your television and he takes a cupcake and then he leaves, right? So he gets into your house pretty easily, doesn't do that much damage. Now, there's another thief who comes in and kills your pets and sets fire to your house, but it's almost impossible for him to get in. Right? These are the two viruses, right? The combination of the two is the thief that can very easily get into your house and kill your pets and set fire to it. Well, that's what happened. And the idea that this happened just through random mutations, come on. We have to, I mean, we're not that bad at math anymore as a culture, are we? The S proteins in SARS-CoV-2 come from SARS coronavirus. The natural SARS strain doesn't have a strong replicating ability, which is why it killed some but didn't become a pandemic. This is the deadly combo. It did not come from bats. It did not come from the Huanan seafood market. And it did not come from nature. But there's a possibility, you say. Yes, and maybe every single criminal has an evil twin who somehow lives off the grid and escapes. Come on.
And ladies and gentlemen, I rest my case. The expert witness, Stefan Molyneux, his channel, support and subscribe on YouTube. Link will be in the program description box at HagmanReportLive.com. There's more, of course, to that video. I encourage you to watch it all, subscribe to his channel. I'm telling you right now, all right, there was motive, there was means, there's opportunity, then there's the cover-up. We're seeing the cover-up. The cover-up is by the left. But to what end? But to what end? It is for global governance. It is the ID 2020. It is Agenda 2030. It is all of the above. And if I missed any, I'm sure you'll remind me in the comment section of YouTube. But the bottom line is this is what we're dealing with. Communist globalists attempting to subjugate a population and turn us against ourselves while starving us out. And by the way, Celeste Salam, on this program, talking about, you want food? Oh, you'll get food. Buy the calorie. It'll be meted out to you according to your needs. That's what we have to look forward to. Oh, and in the meantime, yeah, the governor against governor. Or, I'm sorry, governor against President Trump. Governors against President Trump. And we, the citizens, will be in the crosshairs. Collateral damage, perhaps. I'm going to wrap this up with a report by Greg Reese, just the first 3 minutes of this. Watch this. This is really the globalist endgame, or more about the globalist. A good piece of, material here by Greg Reese. Band.video. Go ahead.
In the intelligence community, a limited hangout is the deliberate revelation of some information about malfeasance to try to confuse and or prevent discovery of other information. In a recent Daily Mail article, the communist Chinese admit, after 4 months of denial, that the COVID-19 virus resulted from work being done in the Wuhan Institute of Virology and was paid for by the U.S. National Institute of Health, run by none other than Anthony Fauci during the Obama administration. In the article, the CCP admits to harvesting their bats from a single cave in Yunnan, China, thereby vindicating the work of Indian researchers who scanned its genome and found evidence that COVID-19 is a man-made hybrid, also known as a chimera virus. Controversy sparked in 2015 over the creation of a chimeric SARS-like virus at the University of North Carolina, and a moratorium was enacted to end gain-of-function research in the United States. Gain-of-function research involves genetically increasing the transmissibility of deadly pathogens. Immediately following this moratorium, the Obama administration and the National Institute of Health under Dr. Anthony Fauci outsourced the work to the Wuhan Virology Lab in China. The NIH awarded $3.7 million in research grants to the Wuhan Institute of Virology for gain-of-function coronavirus experimentation on bats. The Wuhan Institute lists the NIH as a partner, as well as the University of Alabama, the University of North Texas, Harvard University, and the National Wildlife Federation. The CCP still claims that it was an accident, suggesting that the innocent bat experiments may have gotten out of control. But the admission is that COVID-19 came from the Wuhan laboratory, and it was paid for and directed by Anthony Fauci and the NIH. the very same Fauci who is now suggesting extended lockdowns and mandatory vaccinations in the United States. As the world increasingly blames China for the COVID-19 virus, the CCP has fired a not-so-subtle warning shot across the bow of their American deep state accomplices. A massive war with China could potentially make all talk of deep state corruption vanish. Reporting for InfoWars.com, this is Greg Reese.
And there it is. We are at war. China is at war. The communists are at war. The communist globalists are at war with the United States, with the people of the United States, people of the West. That's why you see, that's why you're seeing this end game play out right now. It's how you're seeing this end game play out right now. We can still win, and we can prevail in this, but we have to take a stand. We've got to grow up there. We've got to go out there and say, you know what? No. By the way, I'm not taking a vaccine. I'm not taking your orders, and we've got to extricate from this so-called lockdown, quarantine, whatever it might be, and get back to work. And while, of course, dealing with the lethality and the potential aspects problems of the SARS coronavirus 19. Going to be right back. You're listening to the Hageman Report. Thanks for your belief and trust in us. Stay with us.
Reporting on what the mainstream media won't, you're listening to the Hageman and Hageman Report on the Global Star Radio Network.
Welcome to Hageman. It is the Hageman Report. And if it's Tuesdays, it is Tuesdays with Stan Dale from standale.com. Every Tuesday right here on the Hageman Report, giving so much information to listeners. I mean, his segment is one of my favorite segments. He's got a show images page. Go to standale.com and click through to the show images page for this show and follow along. Why don't ya? Doing my best Minnesota. Is it Minnesota? Fargo? No, North Dakota. Accent. Before I move on, I just want to say you've got some time on your hands perhaps, and, you know, why not take a look in your wallet? It's not surprising if you have two or three high interest credit cards in your wallet right now. It wouldn't surprise me a bit. Why not pay them off with a credit card consolidation loan for my friends at Lightstream? It's the right thing to do. It's the smart thing to do. Lightstream believes that people with good credit deserve a better credit loan experience, and that's exactly what they deliver. You can quickly roll balances from multiple credit cards into one single monthly loan payment. You get a fixed, very low interest rate and free up more money in your monthly budget. Lightstream's credit card consolidation loans have rates from just 5.95% APR with autopay, and there are absolutely no fees. You can even get your money as soon as the same day you apply. Now, here's how to do it. Again, my friends at Lightstream, got to give them a great big Thanks. Thank you, Lightstream. Apply today to get a special interest rate discount and save even more. The only way to get this discount is to go to lightstream.com/Hagman. Now I'm going to spell it out for you here. LightStream.com, lightstream.com/Hagman. Two N's at the end of Hagman. That's lightstream.com/Hagman. This is subject to credit approval. Rate includes a 0.50% auto pay discount. Terms and conditions apply, and offers are subject to change without notice. Visit lightstream.com/Hagman for more information. Again, thank you to my friends at Lightstream. Stan Dale from standale.com, the real Indiana Jones, as I like to call him. Stan, how are you, sir? Are you there? Is this on? Stan Dale from standale.com. Hello, Stan.
Can you hear me now?
I can hear you now.
Testing 1, 2, 3.
Can you hear me now?
Oh, dear.
Whoa.
Sorry, I forgot about the echo. Be right back.
No worries. I'm gonna mess up his mind.
Stop already.
How are you, my friend?
Good.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Yeah. There.
It's cold out there. Yeah.
Well, we had a bit of snow. Yeah.
You know, I got to tell you, it's 47 right now, or 45 as I speak. It's cold. I'm tired of this cold weather, but that's just me. And you had some snow, huh?
Yeah. I did. I'll tell you, I've been doing a lot of modification of studio and stuff here and trying to balance lights and stuff so I don't look too red-faced for you. Is that better?
Yeah, look good.
Yeah, it's overexposed. I don't know why, but there you go. Let's try it that way. Sorry, just folks.
I'm telling you, this Eric the Tech lip sync is off, but that's just me. I mean, the whole program.
1, 2, 3, 4. Why is that?
I don't know. We.
It's not. Don't say that.
I just got yelled at. I don't know if you heard me. If you heard him, he said it's not. Stop it.
Well, I'm looking at it here.
Just the preview monitor's off, not the live.
Oh, all right. No worries. Don't worry about it, Stan. Yeah, it's the preview monitors that are off, not the live. So don't worry about it. All right, we're good.
What's causing that?
It's our preview monitor system, internal system. No worries.
So just
don't look at the preview monitor. You can just look at whatever, but don't worry about it.
Okay, we're good. I knew that. All right. Right. Okay. Sorry. A dozen controls here. Eric, the tech would probably understand the hassle I'm going through at the moment.
Oh, I'm sure.
Yeah. Harry, just give me a second here. I'm trying to balance that red out. I can't do it on my end for some reason.
I actually, I bring him to tears when I start touching buttons, so I'm not allowed to.
All right. Well, all right. Let me do something here a little bit less cold. How about that?
Hey, Stan, I hate to tell you this, but you got a buffalo in your backyard.
That's an elephant.
Oh, wait. What are you laughing at, Eric? I'll work on my colors tomorrow. Now you got to – I'm afraid to even identify what you have in the back, but it's okay.
I'm in a dungeon.
That's a camel.
What I'm trying to ask – is the lip sync out for the viewers or just on your preview?
Sorry. It's just off for you and me. That's all. The viewers only.
All right.
It's our preview monitor. That's no worries.
No worries, mate. All right. Well, this evening, what do we talk about?
Well,
we had a good day on the stock market. What else?
Really, there's not a whole lot of news. I'm looking here. Not too much really to talk about. Maybe we can just, tell stories of the past. I spent the first hour talking about, Stefan Molyneux. Molyneux had as a YouTube channel, very popular, a million viewers. Talking about, I spoke about the SARS coronavirus and the language, played how he described about the language, how it's kind of, covering up the, parties, how this is a Chinese issue. And, then I spoke about the supply chain, the food supply chain, disruptions that are going to be coming. So, I mean, just to give you an idea of the first hour, what I talked about.
All right.
I don't know.
Have you covered the, David Wilkerson prophecy of 1986 about New York City?
I saw that, but I didn't address that. No, I've seen it, but I'm not sure how many of our listeners and viewers had seen it, or talked about it. So no.
Slide 58 then on the show images page for today.
Okay.
There's the quote, but if you click on the text underneath, it'll take you to the video where he says that, but I'll read it for the people that are listening and not, or maybe driving and listening to this tonight. But I see a plague coming on the world, and the bars and church and government will shut down. The plague will hit New York City and shake it like it has never been shaken. The plague is going to force prayerless believers into radical prayer and into their Bibles, and repentance will be the cry from the man of God in the pulpit. And out of it will come a third great awakening that will sweep America and the world. Now, that was a long time ago, like what, 34 years ago, something like that, 1986.
Yeah.
And it's happening. So to me, that kind of underscores that he was right on the ball with a lot of stuff that he was prophesying.
Very interesting indeed. Now he had passed away from injuries due to a car accident, I believe, right? Is that,
I can't remember, but I did look at a lot of his stuff over the years, and I'd forgotten this, but here we are with New York City with the plague striking it. And there's been, a number of other prophets in the Christian church saying there will be one final great, awakening, of the Christian movement just before the tribulation starts. And, I think we're certainly on Fox News. We're seeing the prayer groups there proliferate. And if you go to Fox Nation, you can watch it and join in. At least watch what they're doing. So I think that this is timely. And certainly it is a time for us believers to share our faith with those who are not believers. Why? Because they need something to give them peace and, to stop the fear. If you understand what's happening, where we're going, and what's going to happen, then you're not going to be so frightened. And I think a lot of people are at risk of suicide because they're so fearful of what's happening with the virus and with their jobs and their loved ones and things like that. So this is just, I see it happening right now. I'm sure we're going to see this great third awakening here of the Christian faith. And as I'm just sure that we're approaching the tribulation period, if we're not in it already, it's, in my opinion, we aren't quite there yet, but it's so close that, it's like a sneeze away.
Yeah.
And this is a great time of year for it to start.
It just saddens me that, Christians are gripped by fear, because fear is, to me, number one, I believe we've had ample warning about what's to come. I guess many people didn't believe it, or didn't believe it was going to happen in their lifetime. It saddens me to think that we're going to lose people to suicide because of fear. There should be no fear of what's to come, but only, we're going to win. The Christians are going to be victorious in God ultimately. But boy, there's going to be a lot of, bumps in the road between now and then.
Well, certainly those of us that have realized this time would come upon us sometime soon, we have prepared. And like Holly and I, we've prepared for ourselves and for neighbors and family. We've got, extra things. We just don't tell them about it but to help them out because they didn't prepare. Case in point, our dealers for the Dare to Prepare book that Holly wrote, which of course has preparations for all kinds of events, but you know, disasters and things like that. But that book is flying off the shelf. We're looking at a reprint here where I thought we'd have enough for another half a year, but at the moment we're going to have to put an emergency reprint if we can get the printer to function. I'm not sure about the lockdown and how their staff are doing now, but if we can't, we've got, oh, probably half a pallet left. So if you're planning to get it, don't put it off because we will be out of stock fairly shortly.
Folks, get it while you can. Dare to Prepare, go to standale.com, and that book is worth its weight in precious metals, I'll tell you that. And at the old value, you know, 5 years ago, I'm telling you, it's a great buy, and it's a lot of great information. Dare to Prepare. My wife and I use that all the time. Eric the Tech and his wife, my daughter, they use it. It's a good go-to reference. Dare to Prepare. And don't make us get the scribes over here to copy that by hand and send it to you. So,
yeah, another thing, too, because we are approaching the period of time that I wrote about 1978 in the Cosmic Conspiracy. We're seeing crisis curves develop, which I did predict from using the Bible, the particular Revelation of John, to as my benchmark. I did predict that we're going to see several crisis curves appear to come to a head and be, you know, life-threatening for the planet, coercing the people of Earth, of all the nations, into accepting or at least wanting a global government. And the cry for this is already starting. I'll tell you about that in a minute. But we're threatened with famine, you know, and shortage of food on the shelves, even in America, because of the delivery systems being impacted by the coronavirus emergency. Water is going to become shorter and shorter in supply. I discussed some of that last week in the Himalayas and things like that. They're already having problems with the icebergs melting up in the high mountains. We've got a threat of global war. We've certainly got pandemic, you know, pestilence. That's a given at the moment. Wow. And on that note, slide 59 about zinc. You have got to watch that short video about how zinc blocks the reproductive capacity of the coronavirus and, in fact, just prevents you from going down with coronavirus.
All right.
Holly and I have been taking zinc now for, you know, months, but we've increased the dosage now to 50 to 100 milligrams a day. Let's see, vitamin D3, vitamin C, all these being sublingual if you can get them, you're dissolving the mouth type things, and folic acid, and then zinc and vitamin A. Those are a combination of things, a cocktail of things that will make it very hard for you to be susceptible to the coronavirus. And this zinc part here, I didn't know about it until this week when someone passed me this video. It's the technical explanation of how zinc blocks the ability of the coronavirus to reproduce. And in essence, if you get a couple of them on you, they die. You know, they wear out, they don't reproduce. It won't be reproducing in your lungs or anything. So I think this is really of value. Go and look at it while you can. I don't know how long, you know, it'll be left on the internet. It's not mine. I don't get any dollars for it. I'm just telling you, it's very important.
All right. Zinc. I've heard, of course, vitamin C, D3, or what is it? D3, K2, or the other way around?
Folate.
Folate, yeah. Right. Yeah. It all helps. And that's, you know, zinc included. So. And it amazes me too, Stan, real quick. It just amazes me how quickly the pharmaceuticals and American Medical Association will come out and say, you can't talk about this stuff. You just can't talk about it because, you're making claims and you've got no basis to make the claims. And, you know, I'll just shut up. You know, it just, it blows my mind.
We have to say, you and I, that we're not doctors. We're not formally trained. We're not prescribing. We're simply saying what we have read and what we are doing. What you do is your business. We're not prescribing.
But I mean, my goodness, Dan, I don't have to physically stick my hand in a blender to understand that it's going to hurt a lot. Okay. So, you know, I mean, by the same token, Okay. But yeah, look, we're not making any claims. No. But my goodness, if you can go natural, go natural. That's what God's given us this stuff for.
Well, yeah, I think it's in this video. If it's not, it's in one of the other reports that Holly got up on our website. If you don't have a strong immune system, you're going to be very susceptible to the flus, the viruses, and things around you. And that's why they say people who are elderly and who are diabetic and other conditions, pre-existing conditions, would be more susceptible to the virus, you know, even dying from it. In the report, it said that the majority a huge amount of Americans are deficient in zinc. I forget the percent, but it's a huge number. In our diet, we don't get enough zinc. Therefore, some of the byproducts of not enough zinc or some of the symptoms of it are headache, lung problems, breathing problems. You know, it's almost like coronavirus itself with the shortage of zinc in your diet. So I think it's because we've depleted our soil so much over the generations of just planting and harvesting crops that have taken the zinc out of the soil. So we need to get that in there to get us back up to healthy. I know it certainly made a difference in my health. Believe me.
Yeah.
Yeah. But anyway, I'm not selling zinc. I'm just sharing what I've read.
And you know, I was thinking about this morning as I was taking a lady for a walk. You know, think of your pets, too. Think of your dogs. This is just me. Stan, you introduced me to a company that, you know, I've been giving my dog nutritional supplements and sprinkling it on her food. And she loves it. Oh, she loves it. And she's healthy. Because dogs can get coronavirus, too, apparently. That's what I heard.
Yeah.
So take care of your best furry friends. All right.
Yeah, we feed ours, you know, the stuff we have. Two different types of it, one for the boy dog and one for the girl dog, because her situation, her autoimmune disease is more serious. But it's working. I mean, they love the food. It's what is it called? NutriPro, I think, something like
NuPro,
that.
NuPro, NuPro, right? And
NuPro,
we don't get anything. We're consumers. We don't get anything for saying that. I mean, it's just. But think of the dog. Think of your best friend too. You know, that's all I'm saying. Yeah.
I've never seen them eat like this. Once we started putting that powder on their food, you know, and put the water in to mix with it to make gravy, I mean, they actually leap up on their back legs when it's lunchtime and bring it out. They're up to like, ha, ha, ha. So they do love it,
and
it is good for them. Anyway, enough of that free commercial for those folks.
Sure.
Inside 60 on my show images page, I have some pictures if you – click on the main picture there, and in fact on the type as well, it'll take you to a composite of images that Pendeley, that's the guy in the green shirt, sent to me. These are the guys that took me on the tour, you know, the safari up into Ngoro Plateau to the Garden of Eden and to the place where the water of Eden came up at the top. And his church got together. I don't know exactly where they got these boxes of hand sanitizer. They're in Tanzania, even, you know, giving out bottles of hand sanitizer to their neighbors and friends and members of the church. I just think it's really cool to see that even over there, they're having the resources that they need to do that.
Nice.
I just, yeah.
And you met these people.
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I met him and his wife. He's the owner of the company, and we met him at the beginning of the journey, which you can see in part one of the Garden of Eden Safari series on the Patreon channel that we have. But then Ellie Rahema, that's the guide that we had that drove us around in the Range Rover. He's a partner with Ben Daly here. And we've been corresponding for, gosh, 3-4 years. And we did raise money for them to try to drill a well for the people of Arusha outside there in a little village up there where they live. Two villages, in fact. And it was a dry well. We dug down several hundred meters and just could not get water out of it. So we did try to help them. But still, it was an effort that gave them hope that we would try to help again. So you never know.
All right.
I wish we had an idea of where to get the water. Actually, you and I talked about this, three, 4 weeks back, where there's a guy, an Air Force guy that we know that is – he has developed a thing that'll make so many 1,000 gallons of water per day out of the atmosphere. It'll just take relative humidity, condense it, sterilize it. Yeah. Remember that?
Yeah.
When this coronavirus thing hit, of course, we lost, you know, information on it, but he'll come back after everything settles down.
And for, okay. Yeah, that's right. I remember that. And I'll have to dig that segment back out. And in the meantime, for those people who want water, we're selling freeze-dried water. All you have to do is, we'll send you a can. All you got to do is add water. It's 1995 while the supplies last. And I'm sure I'll be hearing about that in the next legal form I get. Okay. All right.
You're bad. You're just bad. I don't know whether you heard this or not. Living down in Texas years ago, 40 years ago, something like that. 50 years ago, I guess it was. There was a guy that had a radio station on the border, Del Rio, Texas. And he used to sell some of the most ridiculous things. I remember one of them was guaranteed never failed. Every time, send your money in to get this fly killer and mosquito killer. And people did buy it for, I don't know, $5 or $10, sending the money. And he sent them 2 blocks of wood. Okay. And the one that really got me was he was selling genuine, quoting him, autographed pictures of Jesus Christ. And he was selling a bunch of them. Can you believe that?
You know,
and the guy in the picture was Jesus Christos. That was his real name. You know that. So there are guys like that. Charlatans everywhere, but that reminds me of that. So yeah.
Okay. Wow.
Now I know that. Sorry, go on.
No, I'm just still trying to process that whole thing. But okay. I'm done.
I used to listen to him for comic relief. He was just so outrageous, you know, and the fact that people actually bought his stories and his products, I marveled. It was a lesson in gullibility with people. Yeah. It's probably even worse now with the internet like it is, but.
Oh,
scammed.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Slide 52. Now this, Holly and I spent 7 or 8 hours over the Easter weekend. Easter season, in fact, watching something on Fox Nation. Now that's not Fox News. It's Fox Nation, which is a thing you have to pay for to join it. Right now it's like 99 cents for a free week or $6 for 1 month or every month if you want to take it. And we had never invested in it because we're very, cautious with our spending these days. And so finally, Holly said, look, can you just look at this and see if we can get it just for a little while? Because there's a really good series on called Battle for the Holy Land. Pete Hegseth, one of the hosts of the Fox News on the Normal Channel, hosted this. He went over to Israel and filmed interviews with all kinds of people, Muslims, Christians, Jews, all kinds of people. And to outline what is happening in the Middle East, the tricky balance of power in various quarters there, the Palestinians, the Muslims, the Christians, the Jews, territorial rights, all kinds of stuff, water access, and settlements where they shouldn't be or should be, depending on your point of view. It is so important for Christians and for people who want to know what's going on in the Middle East when this peace treaty is coming up. You'll see this. Why? You've got to see it. I mean, they're even showing places you can't see, even if you go over to Israel yourself. They're down inside one of the digs, 60 feet down, looking at the old road that, the faithful would walk along. It's only 2,100 feet long up from the edge of Jerusalem, the old city, up into where the Temple of Solomon was. And you're down in there where they're digging and uncovering this road, and artifacts are left along the side as you go on the way to the temple. Some pottery and things they already found, and some mosaic tile from a Roman house that was built close by. And you discuss the political value of these things with various people he interviews, in Bethlehem and all kinds of stuff. I tell you what, you just have to see it to get a grasp of the situation in the Middle East, how intricate, how precariously balanced it is, to see how it is the Balkan powder keg of this age, for World War III. And you start to understand the problems that the Antichrist will have to allegedly solve to bring peace to the Middle East and the world. It is It's astounding. I mean, we sat there glued to the TV for the first 6 hours of it, just, you know, jaw dropping. It was just amazing. And in fact, we've watched some of it two or three times, to be honest. But, wow. Yeah. It's just, you got to see it.
How long of a series is this?
The series, I think, had about six parts. It was three parts with two sections and three in one. That's about 6 hours worth. You know, you could probably watch it in a week like we did in a day, but for 99 cents right now. I'm not selling it. I don't get a commission on it. But, you know, it's one of those things that you want to give a commercial to because it's so important. I saw things in there that I'd never known myself, and I'd been over there for a month. And I was so glad that Pete did this. It's just and there are other things on that Fox Nation thing, prayer groups that some of the other news hosts are holding in their homes. They don't broadcast over the main channel, but you can go in there and see Christian prayer groups and Christian movies. And I just think it's just wonderful, wonderful. But this one here, The Battle for the Holy Land, is a must.
Well, thank you. Educate yourself. Yeah, thanks for that.
All right, anyway, interesting point here, slides 49 and 50. You can probably look this up. I forget what the actual website is for this, but it's Flight Radar. I think it's one of the software programs I get, which tracks airlines, you know, planes every day, where they are and when they're going to land and where they're going to land, that kind of stuff. And if you look at this, I have the before and after. What you're seeing there is the before of the United States, all the flights, you know, from the West Coast and from Europe and from way up high, like, I guess, London. You see all those streams coming into America. Then if you slide down the page, you see after the coronavirus, we have domestic flights, but not many of them.
Interesting,
isn't it?
Yeah. But still... And folks, take a look at that picture. But wait a second, Stan, aren't we supposed to be sheltering in place?
Yes. Well, there are military flights. There are certain priority flights to delivering supplies back and forth to hospitals and states. So those kind of things are allowed. You know, they're critical flights.
Right. But no, there is a marked difference there. That's for sure. And especially from overseas. Well, I'm glad. You know, we don't need to be importing disease, virus, viri. What's the plural of virus? Hmm. Viruses? Viri?
It depends on your school of thought. I'll go with viruses.
Viruses.
Look at the slide 50. That shows the global before and after flights.
Mm-hmm.
It looks a little more crowded in the United States, but simply because it's a, you know, a far away view and everything's crammed together. But slide 50 shows you what it was like before. And you can see, you know, out of Europe and out of England, out of China, you can see all the flights going in and out of the United States. But really what has been hit has been Europe and the nations, you know, east of us. If you just look at that after shot.
I'll tell you what, amazing? It's busy up there.
Yeah, with Europe, you have, you know, all those different countries and stuff. I guess there's a lot of in-between flights, but it goes all the way down through to the tip of India, you know, to Sri Lanka and that kind of stuff, and Australia and Indonesia. I mean, there was a huge amount of traffic there, but it's certainly been reduced by this coronavirus scare here. Anyway, I just thought it was interesting to have a look at it just to see the difference and all that kind of stuff.
Have you, I got to ask you this, have you personally flown over the North Pole?
No.
South Pole?
What? You think I'm Santa Claus? I mean,
well, you know, I see some of the planes up there that, you know, I don't know. I'm thinking.
No, look, I didn't get to get in any of the good stuff and go trafficking around a circular disc. But the guys that did won't talk to you about it. There's still a few of them alive. I've communicated with one or two of them over the years, but very carefully so that I didn't expose them. Yeah. What do we talk about next here? What do we talk about next? Oh, it's kind of a not super important issue, but a rather interesting issue. Slide 43. How much did King David pay for the Temple Mount when he bought it from Orlan, for the Temple Mount to build Solomon's Temple. What did he pay for it? Well, he paid $450,000 in modern money. It was 600 shekels at the time. It's in First Chronicles 21, which you can click on that, read about it here, and it'll take you there. But can you imagine from $450,000 in gold he bought it, compared to what it's worth now, what value would you put on the Temple Mount now? The peace of the world? Human life? I mean, it's you can't measure the value of it. It's no. Such a key to everything. That's why Jerusalem's become a burdensome stone to the world.
Who owns that now, the Temple Mount? I mean, who actually holds title deed to it?
The guardian of it was Jordan. Your king, what's his name, of Jordan? But I think they're passing it over to Saudi Arabia next, to Mohammed bin Salman, which is interesting in itself.
Yeah, given everything you've
uncovered. So who owns it? Well, yeah, it's if you listen to the Arabs, they own it. But they do allow the Israeli police up there, and people, as long as they don't pray, come up there, Jews and Christians and whatever. But I think technically Israel owns it, but Arabs, you know, Palestinians and Muslims control it. I think that's the way it works. They have their own, you know, prayer police up there for the Muslims. And then, of course, the Israelis have theirs to try to keep peace in the area when things go awry, which they do often. In fact, in that series with Pete Hegseth on Fox Nation, he takes a trip up there on the top of the Temple Mount. And you see, as he walks past, just the odd group here and there of Muslims who are up on the Temple Mount having a meeting or praying or whatever. They shout out, you know, Allah Akbar and all that kind of stuff at the non-Muslim groups that travel across the top of the Temple Mount. They try to cause trouble to incite it. And you see where the Temple Police, the Temple Mount Police, tell Pete, no, just never mind, just go on, don't pay attention to it, because they're trying to goad people into a fight, you know, which is not the done thing, really, but that's what's happening there. It's just such a precarious balance of power there.
Yeah, a little bit stressful, I guess, up there, right?
Yeah, you know, you'll read in the First Chronicles 21, you'll read that King David was going to be given the property by the guy and his sons that owned it. And David was going to buy it and put the temple there because God had wanted him to make up for the sins and transgressions that they had done against God, that David and his people had. And I think 30 or 40,000 of his people were killed by an angel with a, you know, standing up there with a sword in the sky and said, you know, because you've sinned and done this, and I forget what it was. But anyway, so David bought that Temple Mount but at the instruction of God to make amends and put the temple there when his son builds it. What an incredible thing to pick that spot. That spot.
Wow.
One main water source comes up through there. But anyway, it's certainly going to be an interesting piece of property, more so in the next few years.
So just to be clear, $450,000, not quite $500,000 in today's money.
Yeah, it depends. The price of gold varies. I was using $1,700, you know, an ounce to figure that. But 600 shekels, you convert to old shekels, not new shekels. And, it's about what it is at the moment.
Wow.
And if the price of gold goes up to 1,800 or 1,900 like it has before, it certainly will be over $500,000 original price. What an investment. Wow.
Yeah, at any cost.
Let's see here. There's another thing too. In Iceland, slide 55, there's a volcano up there that has been inactive basically for 800 years, and it is becoming very active. And it's a region that because of the dust and stuff it'll throw up from the continued eruptions of it, it's going to impact air travel for centuries to come, it says. You can read the whole article there. And I've been noticing, you know, there have been little rumblings at Yellowstone and raising of the ground level, you know, inches or so, you know, that they pick up in the satellite. And then we had down in Java, in that area there, we had one in the last, three or four weeks. It was a rather large volcano eruption there. Little Krakatoa, I think it was. I think we're going to see more and more of this as Earth changes start to happen. We've got this impacting air travel over the Iceland area, which is only a small portion of the air traffic, obviously, but then you hit it over in Java region there, where we're going to hit international flights from Indonesia and maybe India, some of that, where the dust trails will go. But I think we're going to be seeing, Lake Taupo go in North Island, New Zealand. Keep an eye on that, and keep an eye on China in the news. If there's a scandal over a dam failure over there because of some low-grade timber or wood that was built used to build it, and the people that were building that section of the dam cheated and got substandard timber when they were paid for good quality timber for the dam works that they were building. So that's what the old Maori, you know, kahuna woman told us years ago down in North Island, New Zealand, when I told her about my vision of that, of Lake Taupo going. She said, when you see this Chinese dam scandal hit the news, know that Lake Taupo is about to erupt like you saw, and it will be a very destructive eruption. So even the natives down there are seeing the same thing.
Mm.
We're getting close, I think.
Should have, those people who use the substandard lumber, make them live in the shadow of the dam. Wake up every morning, gee, I wonder if this is going to be it.
It's going to kill, apparently this thing will cause a breach. And I don't know whether it's the main dam, excuse me, over there, or whether it's a tributary to the main dam, that great, huge dam. But it will be big enough that it'll make international news because of the people it kills and it breaks.
Okay.
Right next to that, slide 56. I guess I'm running along here. Did you have anything to say on that before I go on?
No, go ahead.
Okay. All right. Well, slide 56 is not so much news as it is an increase in technology and our ability to image the sun and its magnetic fields. If you click on the picture, you can also go to the main site by clicking on the text, but on the picture, if you enlarge that, you'll see an area of two sunspots that are joining. Wow. How do I do that? How do I do that? Let me.
Check
I've
that
got
out,
a bit folks. Of a frog there.
There we go. Okay.
Yeah. This is a much more, it's a very high resolution picture of the sun that the British have been able to develop, showing the strands of the magnetic field as it goes between these two sunspots. Now, this is not a current sunspot, but it's one that they took here a while back, testing this imaging process where they could see, you know, the fine print of the magnetic fields, if you wish. Now, the size of the Earth is up there in the upper right hand corner of that, compared to a single strand of these magnetic fields that are leaping back and forth between these sunspots. So you can see how big they are.
Wow. That gives you some idea. Okay. I didn't realize the disparity of sizes there.
Yes, yes, definitely. Yeah.
So those strands are electrical gases?
They're magnetic fields. They're magnetic plasma, you know, magnetic fields. Sunspots are magnetic. They have plus and minus polarity depending on where they are in the north and southern hemisphere and what the predominant north and south pole magnetic field is at that time. It reverses every 11 and a half years or so. I'm just trying to find these structures, these fine structures, these fine filaments, the process they're using now can pick out something that's 43 miles in diameter or across it. And, it's 0.01% of the total size of the star, but those little strands are million degree magnetic plasmas. And I watch them very closely. But of late, I can't because March the 13th, I think, they stopped making the magnetograms because of staff layoffs or whatever, I don't know. You still get the solar images and the 48-hour rotating video, but you can't get the current magnetic field structure, which is something I was watching. Those filaments, and the majority of them, those fine filaments you're seeing in the images, are about 300 miles wide and down to 43 miles wide, and they can average those. But those tell me what's happening inside the sun. And on the 13th of March, when they stopped producing the magnetograms on it, which this is like that, I could see that the North Pole was lopsided. It was off to one side, and the magnetic fields were trying to right themselves. And I had not seen that before. I know the poles invert, but it was slipped sideways by about, 15, 20 degrees. And it hadn't normalized into a normal North Pole for the sun. Sadly, maybe they'll make up for it later and publish them later. But you can go to SDO, which is the NASA's Solar Dynamic Observatory. That's what it is. I think it's called like that. I go there every day. It's sdo.gsfc.nasa.gov, Solar Dynamics Observatory. And you can look at the more images thing that they have and the data links up at the top. And you can see, like today, it's March 13th that they stopped doing it. I'm just checking that. You can look at today's picture, and you'll see that we have a few little hot spots, but nothing to write home about. And it would appear from this that the North Pole has normalized to where it should be almost. So things are good.
Interesting.
And okay. Yeah. I always go there and then I scroll down to the bottom where it has a EUVI. It's a heliographic map of three quarters of the surface of the sun. Even part of the backside of it is shown in this. One of the satellites that would provide the rest of it failed a long time ago. So we only get three fourths of the image. But in there, I look for little bright spots to tell me what's coming around to surprise us. But moving from left to right on the image there, it's a green image at the very bottom of the page. Stonyhurst heliographic imagery in the 195 angstrom wavelength, which is kind of greenish looking. And that is current. So anyway, that's just a nice place to go.
Got it.
For vacation, you know. No.
Ooh.
No. A little bit warm. All right.
Yeah.
Let's look at some other things here. Earth, universe, slide 57. You know how we've talked about how the universe as we know it is not real. It's not reality. God, where he dwells, is real, but our universe is not real. It's like a virtual reality. And this article here is showing where the scientists believe that they have found evidence that the universe is really a hologram, that it's not real. And I think that's just really cool because it's scientifically saying what I've been talking about with folks for a long time. Interesting article.
You know, I could probably spend a week talking to you about this because I understand. I kind of understand this, but I don't really understand this. I don't even know if that makes sense. I kind of see what's being said here. Help me
well,
out.
Well, it's like this. I mean, you know, Star Trek fans know that they have something called a holo chamber, holodeck, where they use lasers to reproduce environments, you know, seashores and whatever, that you can go in as a crew member and you can smell the sea air and touch things. That's not exactly how, it works in real life. Holograms are light and they're not like a lot of mass or anything. You can't really touch heavy objects like that with our current technology. However, virtual reality, when you put it on the little headset and the goggles and the you know, the tactile gloves where you can feel and touch things that aren't real, but they're in the computer program that you're looking at, like, you know, at Disneyland, you go into some fairyland or whatever, and you actually are there. You can turn around and look and touch things and move them around. Okay. In that respect, what we are seeing, what we're experiencing here in our universe is being controlled by God. It is a controlled environment, and the programs that he generated for everything, galaxies, you know, stars, universes, planets, everything, all are under his control. And it's not reality where he lives. We're in a solid form here, so we're not like light beams or light photons, you know. We're solid, and this is the environment that he created for playing out what has to be done to harvest a number of souls or people, you know, individuals, to join him in the heavens to replace the third who rebelled with Satan and are being cast out. At least that's the way I see it from Scripture.
Okay.
And that's what the whole purpose of this is. And that's why he allowed and planned on Adam and Eve violating the laws, you know, in the Garden of Eden, eating the food, forbidden fruit, and being out of fellowship with him, because that would allow them to procreate and create a lot of humans that could then have the choice to choose for God of their own free will, not be forced to it. And that's why it's taken so long, because there were a lot of beings in the heavens that were kicked out with Satan, a third of them, to reproduce, you know, enough humans who would, of their own free will, follow God and follow Messiah, Jesus, his son. Jesus formed on the cross, he formed a portal, if you wish, a doorway by which humans, after they die from this body, can go into the real world where he lives. It's probably going to be a lot less dense atoms and stuff than here, and you'll be able to travel and do a lot of things that you can't do here instantaneously. But that portal was opened, and the illustration of it was when Jesus said, "It is finished," and, you know, it's completed on the cross and died, it gave his soul up to God, or his spirit. The cloth that covered the Holy of Holies in the temple, in Jerusalem there that Herod had built, the cloth that protected the Holy of Holies from the outside world ripped from one corner to the other like that, down like that. And I think it was around 9 o'clock in the morning their time or something, or 9 o'clock in the evening their time. Yeah, 9 o'clock in the evening, wasn't it? Yeah. It ripped. And then there was this big storm and lightning and earthquake and everything occurred. But that was symbolizing the portal opening up, meaning that mankind who followed Jesus, you know, and accepted that he shed his blood for them, could come into the kingdom of heaven with Jesus when their time came. For some, it won't come. If you look at the rapture series, at some point, there will be some living people who will just be transformed into their new bodies and won't see death. But the majority of us will probably die and then raise from the grave if we're accepted as part of the bride of Jesus, and we will go to be with him in that place. But that portal had to be opened. And
okay. And just had, yeah, yeah. That portal represents an entryway into a parallel universe, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
In the ancient legends, like over in Sumeria and stuff like that, where they built the ziggurats and where Nimrod built the Tower of Babel, they built it. They were trying to reach up to the high places of the heavens, because when angels or even Jesus himself, when he poured it through, the chariots and things were hot, you know, flaming in the sky. And then they cooled down as they came down to earth. And then after a while, you could touch them and things, because they'd throw it off the extra energy that they had coming through from their world to ours, their universe to ours. And that's, you know, a vast difference in energy. And below us, there's a, might even be a level below us in this virtual reality, which is where hell is, and where, the density is much greater than here, and its temperature is colder than here, which is, again, as I've said before, why when people say they have a ghost come into the room, it's cooling the room. They feel the chill, because these beings are trying to gate through into our world to get to a body and possess it, I guess, but we know as we get closer to the tribulation period and in the tribulation, that the veil that separates that lower dimension from us is going to thin so much that we will see, if not be able to touch, these horrible beings that are trapped down there by God. You know, they'll be trying to come through.
Anyway, that makes sense.
I know it.
To me, it makes sense, especially when you talk about the the chill. You know, how many people have actually felt that? I think a lot of people have. Okay.
And the warmth then of coming the other way when the angels and when Jesus came through in his pre-existent state, would I had the Holy Spirit enter me as I started my ministry? I was driving on the way to Channel 9 to do my first public, you know, broadcast, television, everything, to talk about how I worked with Dr. Teller and his group. And when I was driving up the hill to go into Channel 9, I felt this warm glow start at the back of my head and run down my spine and out through my shoulders and my body. And because I was nervous, you know, you don't think whether you're going to die or whatever, because I was telling on some very powerful people. And I felt that. So from that dimension coming in, the spirit is warm feeling as it enters you, at least for me anyway. And so I attribute that to being a higher energy density than the one below us. Anyway, right. That's.
And that makes sense to me. No. Okay.
Okay. Now, something I want to cover before I run out of too much time here. I've seen where a couple of states governors are saying they're outlawing purchasing of seeds to grow in your garden and gardening things. They're making it illegal to do that. I don't know why, but you'll see, fortunately, Colorado's not one of those. It's from slide 51 through, 46, 47, 48, and 51. All of those are from our current efforts to sprout our own seeds in the kitchen and then plant them into raised garden beds. You can see that there. Let's see. Look at slide 51 first. Click on that picture. Now, that'll be up on that's on our website today. Holly put it up, but it'll be up on our site here, the show images page, for at least a week. And that shows you several shots of our nursery. They're in the kitchen, what would be a small dining room, I guess, but we use it for sprouting. And we took seeds and we sprouted all these plants, the squash, the watermelons, you know, the cantaloupe, cabbage, lettuce down on the bottom of the floor there. This is just shots of our stage two of the nursery. Stage one is those little peat moss boxes there where we put the seeds in there first. When they get big enough, we transfer them out of those covered plastic things that you see in the first photo over to the bigger ones. Now, what you've got up there now is a picture that I took last night over from our deck out looking at some of the raised gardens. And we put ground cloth tents over them and put lights like you'd use for working in your automobile or stuff like that, but they're several hundred watt lights that we put inside these ground cloths on the ground to heat up the inside because we were going to have two nights of 18 degree weather. So we didn't want to kill our peas or our onion sprouts that were already planted now. And that's what that one shows. Then slide 47, if you look at it, shows the next morning you can still see the light kind of punching through on the peas on the left there. You don't see much snow on it. Everything else got snow, but it kept it so warm that it melted the snow that did land on it, which meant that, you know, our efforts succeeded there in keeping it warm enough that it didn't kill our new little plants. Now, we tried an experiment in slide 48. If you click on that, we had several peach trees, but one of them was my favorite, and I wanted to keep it, at least some of the blooms, working. And you'll see they're big pictures. If you zoom it up, you can see where I put three lights. Two are the automobile like lights or utility lights, and one of them is one of those several hundred watt, you know, emergency light stands or whatever, or night lights in red. And I put those there to see if the light would generate enough heat that the prevailing winds, you know, or breezes would move it through the tree and save, you know, some of the blossoms. Now, this is an ongoing experiment. I don't know whether it will do any good or not, but in a week or so, I'll go out and re-photograph this and see, you know, if any of the blossoms survive this terrible drop in the temperature. We've had a very strange, you know, spring.
Yeah. Yeah. The temperatures here are holding steady in the, you know, in the 40s, which it's not usually like this in this area.
And our high winds took out all the buds.
Yeah, high winds. Oh, my gosh, Stan.
Really?
Oh, yeah.
Well, fortunately, we haven't had that problem this year. Not yet, anyway. But, yeah. Very quickly, we're running out of time here. Slide 54.
Sorry, we got a few minutes, actually. We actually have 5 minutes, brother.
Oh, so. Okay. All right. slide, what was it, 54. Just look at that quickly. This is showing when we have solar EMPs, and you can click on the article and look at the whole article. When we have solar EMPs, which power grids are most likely to be damaged and go down? And you can see that the eastern coast and all the way up to the Great Lakes and to Denver in Colorado, all the way over to Washington State and Northern California are the places that the line voltage may drop, you know, in a solar EMP situation or, you know, or just coronal mass ejections will produce isolated hits, not hitting all of that at once, just certain parts and up in Canada as well. So that that article is worth reading. I know it's a little technical here and there, but
well, in that graphic, solar suit, if I can ask, in that graphic, is it better to be in the purple or in the yellow?
It's better to be in the gray.
The gray. Okay.
Down south.
Yeah. All right. That's.
Yeah. I know that Texas has its own, you know, like its own power supplies, you know, power companies, and it does share with the network occasionally. And we share some of Colorado's power from Pueblo here over to Texas through a line transfer. But Texas is one of our test cases for generating a way to protect the power grid itself. And not only, you know, people get EMP shields for their home, but we're looking at shielding the entire power supply so that when the power is turned back on, that will work and it'll give you power. So Texas is our test case, and we've been doing that for several months now.
Wow.
Building, yeah, testing over there with, there's an astronaut that's on, the head of the committee over there that Tim, my partner, is on. And, you know, that's be in the gray area. And when we protect some of the other areas, then you can be in those. But right now, in spite of the politics and problems down there, Texas is a very good place for, you know, power probably being good and staying through an EMP pulse.
And this is why, folks, you need EMP Shield, empshield.com, promo code Hagman, right? That's,
yep.
There you go. I mean, seriously, look, folks, protect what you have. And, when, you know, when the power does come back on or, you won't be useless. You know, your computers and your electronics won't be doorstops. So.
Oh, right. Did I tell you I'm going to do, like you're doing, you know, with your Patreon things and hold a fireside chat with them?
No, do tell.
Yeah. Well, I was playing around with all this background stuff so that I could get it and get rid of the ugly wall behind me so that I could get online with the, you know, our patrons. And you'll see up there, put a note about it at slide 61, but, I'm hoping to get it ready to test maybe by next Sunday evening. I'll try not to overlap. I think you're the first Sunday of the month or something like that, aren't you?
That's correct.
Did you hold yours?
Yeah, first Sunday at 7 p.m. Eastern, right. Oh, thank
at
you
this
for that.
Time, yeah, I'm going to try to do it on, what would that be? That would be the 12th and 19th, probably. I'll notify everybody in Tier 3 there that we're going to do that. And I'm still learning how to use that Zoom thing. There's a few.
By the way, would you be doing that in the evening or?
Evening around six Mountain Standard, I think.
So
yeah, six Mountain
Eastern,
Standard. So it's five Californian, seven Eastern. Eastern.
Yeah. Eight.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, that's good. Yeah. And Zoom is really not that hard to use. And it's not, it's safe too, to the extent.
Yeah, for you, young. You young fellows get it really quickly. Us old guys, we have to kind of think about it, you know, and cogitate a bit. And there's a lot of little buttons to push and options. I mean, when you dig down the guts of that Zoom thing, you find yourself asking, what language is this?
I know. That's why Eric the Tech is – that's why he gets paid the big bucks because, you know, hey, I –
that's what I figured. You got Eric
doing. Excuse me. Yeah.
Lucky dog.
Well, hey, I'll loan him out to you. He's reasonable. No, seriously, he'll help you with it, whatever you need.
Yeah.
I'm sure he will.
Yeah, but, I know. I know.
Right. Well, you know what? We're at the end. You've done it. You've taken us to the end.
Okay.
So,
hang on. It's a sharp cliff here.
Yeah. Thanks for those pictures of your garden and stuff. It kind of gives me an idea of what to shoot for. The raised flower beds or the raised beds. I'm sorry. The raised beds and the,
yeah.
Appreciate
yeah.
that. All right. Thanks, Dan. Appreciate it.
Lord bless you. Hope to see you next week.
Indeed.
Lord willing.
All right. Love to Holly and the furry ones and the fur babies. And See you next
week.
Yeah.
All right. Bye-bye now.
Folks, that'll do it. I want you to have a great evening. Thank you so much for your belief and your support in us. May God bless.